Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds. There, it's a Halloween episode.
It sure
that's,
is.
That's
yeah.
all you got to do to make something.
It scared
Halloween.
Me.
Yes, you just got to go. There.
What episode is this, Graham?
488.
Mm, very exciting.
Wow. It's there.
Scary. See, that number is scary.
Oh,
you
isn't
made
it?
The number
it's,
scary.
I just themed the episode. Mm-hmm. That's all you got to do. Now it's a Halloween yeah. episode. Yeah, 488, everybody. Countdown to the December 12th final episode. Episode yep. 600, a Dynasty typewriter. Get your tickets. Mm-hmm. We've already got confirmations from... Jimmy Pardo is going to be on the show. Janet Varney in some kind of costume because she's going to go have to do some other show.
Perfect.
She's like, is it okay if I wear this some hee-haw? I was like, yeah, absolutely.
Yes. It's not okay if you don't.
Yeah, you're not allowed to come to the show unless you're in some weird hee-haw outfit. In fact, I hope all of our guests pick their favorite hee-haw character. Yeah.
Neil Chris Gore
mm-hmm. confirmed. Mm-hmm. Kat Alvarado, I believe.
Be Gary weird if Bright. Neil didn't confirm. He's like,
That'd
I'm busy
great
that
if he
night.
Blew yeah, off. Yeah. If he just was like, ah, I've been
10 years is enough.
I've done
I'm
enough
done.
With
yeah,
these
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, I'm done.
I don't need more of this. So yeah, go to dynastytypewriter.com or grahamelwood.com for those tickets, guys. Mm-hmm. Let's introduce our guest who's
Let's
been
do
who's
it.
Been on the show numerous
yep.
times.
One of our favorite guests,
a favorite.
Sam. Always have a lot going on. Lot, really
Say
interesting opinions. We actually don't.
No, so. There's ones that are
not our favorite.
Not our favorite. You only would have done one episode if you were.
Excellent. Excellent.
Ladies and gentlemen, a producer, writer, and also, you know, we talked before, possibly future podcaster.
Oh, yeah.
You were talking about maybe putting something together.
Maybe one of these days.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Guggenheim.
Hey. It's good to be back.
Yeah. So let's get right. Obviously, you worked big in the comic book world and all that.
Doing
so.
The giant CW crossover. How many shows are involved in this now?
Six shows. And it's five episodes.
Wow.
Crazy. It's in complete insanity. So I'm fairly exhausted. I may actually fall asleep in the middle of this podcast.
Yeah.
Don't take it personally. I'm just really tired.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But so we talked about Joker. We both really liked it. We did just Joker spoiler up. Now, you did not like it, or you had more issues with it than we did.
You know, it's funny. First of all, I have this general rule. I don't like to publicly bash or criticize anything because, you know, I don't want to put that out into the universe. You know, I will say I thought Joaquin Phoenix was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I thought it was incredibly well realized and beautifully shot. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated it for all the things it was doing. I found the actual experience of watching the movie to be unpleasant. I found it to be unrelentingly nihilistic, and it watching it, it felt like being just kicked in the nuts for 2 hours. And
right.
Now one could say like, well, that's the mark of a really good filmmaker, and clearly Todd Phillips is, you know, a very very talented filmmaker. It was just not my cup of tea. Not my cup of tea. But you know, I recognize that you know, this is a polarizing film with, you know, a lot of people with different points of view.
And I haven't heard anyone say, well, it was okay. People
yeah,
either
loved
it or they
yeah,
yes, or the people were like, that was awful.
Absolutely.
I can't believe I sat through it. That kind of thing.
Yeah, it was it was, I mean, in that sense it was very, very interesting and a bravura piece of filmmaking. You know, I just it was not for me.
Now let me ask you this, because you're kind of behind the scenes at DC and with the crossover and all the characters that you're dealing with there, there's always checks that you have to make with the studio. Can the character do this? Can the character do that? What do you think was going on with that movie, because it was such a departure for that character?
And this is
that's a good question.
So iconic. Like, this is probably the most iconic supervillain other than like
Lex Luthor
that exists.
I guess, you know, for my money, I didn't find it to be that out of line with the character. I felt, you know, I certainly felt a lot of Killing Joke influences. Without spoiling the end, the end was very reminiscent of, you know, Dark Knight Returns. Again, without spoiling it. I will say there was nothing – I think the only character in the movie that was portrayed in a way that felt inconsistent with the comics, or certainly different from what has previously been established in the comics, was Thomas Wayne.
Yes.
And again, without sort of getting into spoilers, like I was a little surprised that Thomas Wayne was characterized the way he was characterized. But mm-hmm. as far as the Joker was concerned, I found it to be, you know, very much in keeping with mm-hmm. everything I've read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view. I heard somebody...
It had to be like some hand-wringing over at Warner Brothers in DC. Like, well, is this too dark? Is this going to make me, you know, that kind of thing? Like, or should we be taking this chance? They must have been second-guessing all the way to the end.
Yeah, and you know, somebody... I was at this... So that filmmaker we had on the show, Kevin Rocca, mm-hmm. He had a screening of his documentary, Revolution mm-hmm. Televised, and I was on a panel to speak about it afterwards. And at the like the Bernie Sanders campaign headquarters, so a lot of lefty, mm-hmm. a lot of lefties there. And someone else on the panel said that they were more critical of Joker because they're like, this is how a big corporate entity like DC and Warner Brothers depicts the working class, and as they're a crazy clown. They're all mentally ill clowns, and I was like, "Wow, I hadn't thought of that at all." You know, like
yeah, it's a very left,
point of view, and I was like,
"Which is interesting."
I didn't think about that. I mean, one of the things I liked about the movie was it was, you know, again, listen to the spoiler up to get more of the details, but where he sort of the Joker says, you know, he's abandoned. He's abandoned by society. They cut the funding on his therapy. And he's like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, and that's to me, like, one of the things that resonated with me is like society created this.
That's very, I definitely like the payoff. Mm-hmm. It takes 2 hours to get there. And that journey is not enjoyable.
Pleasant. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing too. Yeah. It is one of those movies that's like,
it makes you squirm.
It's uncomfortable, mm-hmm. Matt. It is an uncomfortable movie.
And I don't mind a movie that's uncomfortable.
And I will say this though, if you didn't find the movie uncomfortable, take another look at your life.
That's true. Yeah. That's very, very true.
Yeah. And I can totally get why, you know, you or anyone that might feel the same way, Mark, was like, it was too uncomfortable. So let me ask you this. Did the uncomfortability of it take you out of the movie? Is that why you...
No, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, there are great movies that are uncomfortable to watch. You know, Schindler's List comes to mind. You know, this is no Schindler's List. I mean, you know, all due respect to Todd Phillips. You know, I guess it was... felt in terms of its nihilism, it felt like it was hitting the same note over mm-hmm. and over and over mm-hmm. and over and mm-hmm. over again. So I think I was craving, you know, even in my nihilism, a little range. Not even light, just range and difference. And you know, again, it felt unrelenting in a way that like the steady drip of water is unrelenting.
Mm. Right.
And I wanted a little more, you know, variation.
Hmm. That's interesting. Cool.
Okay.
Well, let us know what your thoughts are, listeners.
Yes. Always nice to hear a differing opinion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Watch the movie and mm-hmm. listen to the spoiler app with Cecily Knobler and tell us what you think.
Yeah. So, all right. I saw the movie Jojo Rabbit, another quite polarizing movie. Whenever you have,
you think?
Whenever you have Hitler as an imaginary character, yeah.
You just look at the movie poster and you go, boy, this is gonna cause some.
This might rub some people the wrong way. Yeah,
I really want to see it. I'm looking forward to it.
And Taika Waititi, he's actually Maori and Jewish. He asked, why did you choose yourself to play Hitler? He said, the answer's simple. What better fuck you to the guy?
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
He's not wrong.
Which is great. But here's the thing about this movie. Let me preface this by saying, World War II satire is difficult.
That's a small bullseye.
Yes, it is. When even you look at like Catch 22, like brilliant book, but you try to make a movie, not so good. You make a series, even with George Clooney in it, couldn't even get past the second episode. Right. It was not working or resonating. So it's not an easy thing to do. Even like with Kurt Vonnegut, you have Slaughterhouse-Five. You know, there was some satire in it, but it was also very, very disturbing, which is what he pretty much does. You're laughing one minute and you're disturbed the next. So I think what happened here, and I'm a huge fan of this filmmaker. I love everything he's done, even back to, I was just
even
watching
Green Lantern.
I was even watching some old Flight of the Conchords. Remember those on HBO? He directed a couple of those too.
Yeah, he's great. He's an inventive director.
And what's interesting, even about all of his work, there's a coherence to this story. Like, it doesn't go off on all these weird tangents. Like, even like Hunt for the Wilder People, everything is like very solid storytelling in addition to very funny and engaging. And I think what happened here, because I didn't find a lot of those elements here in this movie, because it felt like it was all over the place. It was like, well, we're doing a satire, but now it's goofy with Hitler is like the imaginary character, and then, you know, they have a Jewish girl that the mother's hiding in the attic.
Right.
So he was trying to put all of these different things and themes in this film. And what it felt like is like a shoehorn of like 100 ideas and things he wanted to say. So it didn't come out coherent. It ended up just kind of being a mess, like all the way through, where like, okay, that's a cool idea. Now we're not exploring it anymore. That's a cool idea. Now we're not exploring it. That's a cool idea. It was almost like a string of World War II satire premises. So like even
it's
like
a genre unto itself.
Yeah. Like I'll give you an example. Like at the beginning, like in the trailer, you know, the kid joins the Hitler Youth and he goes to the camp and he trains. That's literally one scene. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not training or in this camp for very long. And
that's disappointing. I wanted to see more Hitler Youth training.
Yeah, because
that's what attracted to me about the trailer.
Because isn't that where all the majority of the jokes would be?
I was kidding, actually. I'm not dying to see a lot of Hitler Youth training.
But it was set up to, like, that's where, like you were saying, that's where a lot of the jokes were. Because it's set up like Rebel Wilson, Sam Rockwell, like they're all set up in this camp to like, okay, well, this is going to be kind of like a comedy of errors and satirical.
That's what I thought it was
going to
be. It was
training.
Like mocking how ridiculous that master race crap was.
Yes, and it was for one scene.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and then it goes back to like him just having conversations with the Jewish girl that his mother is hiding in the cellar, then his mom, and then the resistance. Then Sam Rockwell comes back a couple times, and he has, you know, it's hinted at that he's having a relationship with his his number one, I guess it was, the, you know, his lieutenant underneath him, and he's like in this weird flamboyant outfit towards the end. So there's all this like, all right, well, you know, Nazism was also very hard on being gay. That was mm-hmm. the same as being Jewish. And so it's trying to hit all of these points about Nazis, but it does it in a really kind of clumsy way that I think, again, it's very difficult to satirize, and it's very difficult to satirize well. And I think while there are some really interesting, funny scenes, the acting's really good, and I think it was just too many premises shoved into one movie, and I think that was the problem with it. So, and that's why, too, I'm like wondering, like, I'm seeing mixed reviews on it, but no one can really kind of pinpoint why they liked it or why they didn't like it. So I think that's what's going on, is like people are either gravitating towards the stuff they didn't like in the movie or the stuff they did like, but there's so many things that people are all picking different things in the film. So it was a little disappointing, but again, we talked about this before, I'd rather see a filmmaker take a swing and a miss and do something different
Absolutely.
And interesting than us getting, like, you know, another Hangover movie, you know, that kind of thing. Right. So so I'm happy it exists. I was just I wanted it to be a little more kind of cohesive and better. Like, it takes a dark twist towards the end, which is expected, but then, like, it the tone was definitely up and down. Like, that really didn't get mastered quite well either. But again, he knows how to do all these things. So these are all things I can't really blame, like, well, he doesn't know what he's doing. He does. He's a very talented and very competent filmmaker. So these were just kind of choices that didn't always work. That's all.
Yeah. So. All right.
So it's definitely worth a view. Check it out on an airplane or somewhere, you know, where you can.
Just out of a curiosity, to see, like, what worked
for
and
sure.
what didn't.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm very curious. I'm definitely, it's on my list of things to watch for sure.
All right.
So now, Graham, you saw Dolomite Is My Name. This is kind of the big comeback movie for Eddie Murphy.
It's really, I wanted to see this for several reasons. One, I did it was supposed to be like a virtual reality of video game back in 1994 before that technology, this young, and with Rudy Ray Moore. I was in it. And,
oh, wow.
And it ended up just being like a short film called Dueling Firemen, which is on my YouTube page. And it's crazy. It's a crazy movie made by crazy people. But they got Rudy Ray Moore, and Dolomite, I was kind of familiar with who Dolomite was. And this movie's really cool because it tells the story of Rudy Ray Moore and how it's such a great story and in the sense that, like, he was a singer. He was trying to be a lounge comedian. And he was like, you know, he's probably older. It's not working anymore. It's the 70s. And you see him like trying to sell his album, trying to, you know, and a nightclub owner like, hey, man, we're trimming your time back. And like, you know, all this stuff. And he's like, got to figure. He's just like, I got to do whatever I got to do to figure this out. And comes up with this character. Basically, he took kind of old, like, what did they call it? Like, oh, those are jokes that have been since the slave age. Like the old, like, black jokes. Like these homeless guys would like talk shit. And he's sitting at this table with other comedians, and he's like, wait a minute. So then he goes back down to like Skid Row and gets these black dudes to start telling these kind of funny jokes, and it's all like rhyming, you know, and he's like, Dolomite is my name, fucking up motherfuckers is my game. And he was raunchy, but with that rhyming, and he created this character Dolomite. And reinvented himself, and people loved it. And it's all this stuff of like,
it was a film, right?
Well, yeah, eventually it became a film. So first then he records the Dolomite album, and no one wants to play it. And no one wants to produce the album. So he says, I'm going to do it myself, and starts selling them out of his car and after shows, you know. And he's like, yeah, he does the Chitlin' circuit. And then he starts doing, and then, you know, there's great. And it's Eddie Murphy, man. This movie's, I laugh out loud. It's so funny. And it reminded me when I worked on that project, every black person knew who he was. White people were like, who's this guy? And they were like, oh, we know this guy. Because he then, when he finally got the movie made, same thing, couldn't get distribution, nobody wanted it. So he just went to theaters in the black neighborhoods. And there's this thing, the guy's like, you know, he's like, $500. He's like, you'll pay me $500 to screen this movie? He goes, no, you pay me, you four wallet. And he's like, what? And he's like, well, that's bullshit. And he goes, but you get the entire box office. And he goes, and there's this scene where he's standing in this empty, like, 2,000 seat theater. And he goes, huh. So then he starts going out, and everyone kind of knows who he is because they've heard his albums. And you know, he starts selling out theaters. And he did it all, like, at every turn. He did it all himself, and the movies were like hilarious and way over the top. And it was like, blaxploitation was already a thing. And so he like took Shaft and went, what if I may put jokes in it? What if I took a movie like Shaft? So he played Dolomite. He plays this, it's like corny and cheesy. And obviously this is like, you know, young Eddie Murphy was watching these movies. You knew who he was. And, you know, Chris Rock's in the movie. Snoop Dogg is in the movie. And a lot of rappers say he was the impetus for
Keegan-Michael Key was in it too, right?
For early rap. Because his comedy was that sort of rhyming, rapping, shit-talking, you know, ball-busting kind of thing. And that's how, like, rap started and rap battles, you know. And it was just, it's and Eddie Murphy's great in it because he's funny playing Dolomite, but also the heartfelt of like being told no. That guy that's like, nope, you know, can't do it. The system won't let you. It's sort of like, you know, to a much lesser extent, but like how we, you know, start how the podcasting and the digital revolution is like, well, Hollywood is telling you no. So it's like, I don't care. I'll make my own thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I have my own TV show now on my YouTube channel. I do it. We do this. We, you know, right. You can create mm-hmm. whatever you want to do and do it however you want to do it and promote it yourself.
And people can get it now.
And people yeah. can get it. People, you can make something, put it online, and people can download it.
All you need is a phone or a computer.
Yes. That's you need it. A laptop and a Wi-Fi connection, mm-hmm. and you can make whatever you want to make. And so it really was like you saw he was the one of the precursors to that, you know, because the establishment kept telling him, nope, mm-hmm. nope, mm-hmm. nope. And he just figured out a way to do it, you know?
Got around it.
Yeah, and like, so, and Eddie Murphy, you know, the heartfelt scenes where you see this guy who's like, and he's like, I don't know how to make a movie. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing, you know? And all these great actors are in it, you know? Mike Epps is in it. Craig Robinson is in it. Mm-hmm. Wesley Snipes is in it. Like, it's hilarious and heartfelt. And, you know, it's a great story. If you don't know who Rudy Ray Moore was, it's a great movie to watch. And if you knew who he was, you'll love it. You'll mm-hmm. absolutely love it. Yeah, so cool. Like it's great. It was yeah. yeah, man. And if this is the kind, like, that's the thing where you go, Eddie Murphy, make more of these.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just glad Eddie Murphy's making yeah. movies again.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. I've missed him.
Yeah. And this mm-hmm. kind of movie. Yeah. Not right. the
Not Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah, the Fat Family.
The family movie. Yeah. Any of the family movies. Yeah. Any of the family movies. Yeah.
One of those.
The Crumps.
Yeah, whatever. Yep. Like, make this. Because yeah. this was Eddie Murphy. Mm. Like, and it was kind of sort of reminiscent of one of the things I really liked about Bowfinger. Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Bowfinger was these, like, people trying.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Their hearts were in the right place. Yeah.
And Eddie Murphy playing both those roles.
Oh, man.
Open my door like you opened Tom Hanks' door.
Yeah. I love Bowfinger.
Bowfinger's love fantastic. That scene mm-hmm. at the end of Bowfinger where they're watching their little moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much it means to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, we all come to Hollywood with these big dreams. We're all going to win Academy Awards. And then you're mm-hmm. just like, well.
But that little moment's
that
enough.
Little mm-hmm. moment, man. We had, yep. our short film was in a little festival yeah. and people mm-hmm. like, you know, that little, you're mm-hmm. like, awesome. And so
little victories.
Little yes. victories. And Man Dolomite, you yeah. know, Rudy Ray Moore, he blew it up. I mean, he did it all great. Himself, and it's a really fun film to watch.
I remember as, you know, as independent filmmakers, when that scene in Bowfinger when Eddie Murphy's the other character, not the rich one, was him and Steve Martin were talking about the budget for the film, and Steve Martin's taking out like $4,000, and Eddie Murphy's like, well, you can't make a movie on $4,000. He's like, oh, they cost a lot more. No, that's with deferments and, you know, all these negative figures and all this stuff. Every movie cash is $4,000.
If and, only.
Yeah.
I know, but that, like, you know, we're going to get just hires his friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to make this movie, and then they, you know, get some kids from UCLA mm-hmm. from the film department. They're just like, it's so hilarious.
Well, I can't believe I'm saying this, but there are two good things films to stream from Netflix.
Oh,
yeah.
I saw Train to Busan. This is the South Korean zombie movie on a train. And I kept hearing, oh, it's good. I'm like, yeah, but it's just zombies on a train. How great could it be? And I watched it, and you know what? It's great.
Yep.
It's fantastic. Filmmaker Edgar Wright, who directed Shaun of the Dead, he said that the film in a tweet, he called it the best zombie movie I've seen in forever. So it's really, cool. really good. And the reason it's good is because for a number of different reasons. First of all, they took the time to establish characters. Every horror movie, you know, I remember a casting director telling me this. It's like, we cast a horror movie like they're dramas. And we treat them like they're dramas. If you treat a horror movie like it's a drama with real characters and real character moments, like a father who never had time for his kid is now trapped on this train with his kid and trying to keep her safe, mm-hmm. those are huge human moments. There's a pregnant woman on there. There's a sports team. They're trying to, you know, they've got their bats. They're trying to, you know, beat up the zombies. But it was really good. And what made it really great were a couple of things. First of all, was that the character development. So, like, it was a while before you even saw zombies. You know, you got to see these characters, mm-hmm. got to see them develop. You saw little hints of what was going to happen. But it didn't, like, it was like, all right, zombies, fighting, eating, chasing. No, mm-hmm. we worked up to it, which was great. And then the special effects were really good. Like, whenever you see, like, South Korean or stuff that's not made in Hollywood, you think, oh, the special effects aren't going to be as good. But this one was not. This mm-hmm. one was really interesting. And I think the reason was that this director, Sang-ho-yeon, if I'm saying it correctly, he was an animation director. Mm-hmm. This was his first live-action film. So you have these amazing, big, huge set pieces with trains going off the rails and hordes of zombies coming in where I wasn't expecting at all. And they looked spectacular. Mm. Like, they really, really amazing set pieces where you just feel, you know, like you're being chased with the zombies, that kind of thing. So all of those things are really just credit to the filmmaker to put all this together. Everything from, you know, the great characterizations, the great set pieces, to the way everything was kind of put together. My wife and I are watching and she goes, yeah, I've never cried at a zombie movie before. Right. Yeah, so it has an emotional core. Now, some of the stuff is a little cliche, but it's nitpicking. It's mostly really, really fun and really good and just really... if this exists, a heartfelt zombie movie. So it's really good. So check it out. And, you know, like I said, the characterizations are great, but also the effects and what the director did with trains and zombies is fantastic. So check it
out. That's rad, man.
And you know, someone who doesn't like horror, I think you would really like this movie too, because it goes, it's the opposite of the complaints that you had with Zombieland 2. It did a lot of really more interesting things and things that...
it developed the characters more. Yeah. And told us a story. Like,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Obviously...
And did different interesting things with the zombies, right. too. It did all of those things.
And I want to remind... This just popped into my mind, going back to why this Eddie Murphy Dolomite movie. It reminded me of Coming to America.
Oh, great.
Which is like mm-hmm. so funny and over the top, yeah. but mm-hmm. rooted in some reality.
Satire.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So...
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, Graham, we've got some Patreon sponsors.
Well, you know, Patreon sponsors, thank you so much for seeing us through to the end of this 10-year journey.
Got about 6 weeks left of ad reads for you guys, and we appreciate you guys sticking around to the end. Absolutely.
And, you know, these episodes will stay up.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere. So if you do buy a Patreon ad read, it will be in the catalog for as long as we keep it up there.
Yeah, until the world ends, which could be a year or two, but
still. It could be less, could be 9 months, but, you know, we'll call it 9 to 24 months, somewhere in there.
But that will be out of our control, so but we're telling you. So we will keep them up.
Yes.
Yeah, we can't speak for the world.
Yeah. So the servers still might be up after the apocalypse.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you never know.
I can't guarantee it, but
they might have backup power, might get another month out of that. Yeah, might have the podcast. Can you imagine, you know, the world is in flames? Save the podcast server.
Yes, that should be the top of the list for everybody, for society.
So Patreon sponsors, Johnny Ruland has some short horror stories for sale. The first is called The Shell, and it's a Lovecraftian tale about a neighborhood that loses power and becomes victim to an unknown monster that is waiting in the dark. The second is called She, and is about a high school held under the dark spell of an evil cult leader. They're both on Amazon Kindle for 99 cents, and you can get them at happyhorrorshowproductions.com and clicking on the Buy Short Stories tab. And Fanboy Planet, a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out Fanboy Planet for your comic news, your movie news, TV news, and amazing industry interviews. Fanboyplanet.com, fanboyplanet.com. And Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Wednesday and Friday wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com, coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Fraser, co-host of The Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. They were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an immersive listening experience. Check out alicefraser.com, alicefraser.com with an S. The Art Podcast with Rebecca Evans.
She just celebrated her one-year anniversary.
Yes.
Did a live show party, which was a lot of fun. And there's, I think she's putting up on her YouTube, there was like an interview she did with me and Ron Placone, which you should check out. It was a lot of fun.
Yep. See and hear the clips from the one-year anniversary celebration at theartpodcast.com. or your favorite place to get podcasts, and the Art Podcast channel on YouTube. I guess that you recorded some video too.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay, and Tony McFadden's 14th book is a gritty Australian noir, The Murder of Jeremy Brooks. Pits small-town Australian PI Dan McInnes against corporate greed and corruption. A Sydney surgeon hires Dan to find her husband's killer. The cops think it was a mugging gone bad. She thinks it was a hit. More info at tonymcfadden.net/JB. And from Andy Bowman, every week on the Geek 101 podcast, Ariel and Andy get together to discuss, critique, review, and sometimes bicker about the latest in geek news and pop culture. Become a listener and join the conversation by listening to the Geek 101 podcast wherever you download your podcasts. And last but not least, Jerome Sullivan, Calling on Hollywood, Netflix, Disney, HBO. Go to jcsscreenplays.com and check out the briefs of his completed movie and television scripts. He's got a murder mystery, sci-fi action, coming-of-age musical, horror, rom-com, and more. Go to jcsscreenplays.com. All right, Graham, we've got some trailers now. Now, Motherless Brooklyn. Let's check it out.
Let's see what happens in Brooklyn without any with, moms.
Yeah, it's motherless, Graham.
Me. That's the first thing to know.
I got threads in my head. I got threads in my head, man.
I twitch and shout a lot. Makes me look like a damn freak show.
Can't you ever cut that out?
I'm sorry.
Touch it, Bailey.
I'm sorry. But inside my head's an even bigger mess. I can't stop twisting things around. Words and sounds especially. Have to keep playing with them until they come out right.
Sorry.
Jeez. Forget I asked.
Like I said, a damn mess. Then I started working for Frank. Frank Minna, Private Eye.
Boys?
Frank. Frankly, Frankity, Franco! He's the one who taught me how to use my head, turn it into a strength.
Willis hasn't aged for
he gave me a place
years.
In this crappy world until I screwed up.
Ed Norton's gonna start
Frank!
With an
ultimate. Brooklyn, she's in trouble now.
Ooh.
Does anybody know what Frank was into on this?
There's something going down, and it's big, and they were not happy about what he found.
We find who did this, and we square accounts.
If I figure it out, I'm gonna make him regret it. I promise you that. That's her. That's the girl that Frank was following.
I think she found
already.
Something.
Same complaint trailer too
what
long.
What happens to poor people
enough.
In this city was the news yesterday,
Stop
and it won't be tomorrow.
The whole movie.
Where's everybody go?
Mostly just disappear.
This town is run by Moses Randolph.
When someone isn't seen for what they truly are, that's a very dangerous
test.
Thing.
It's a great test.
The first inkling of power it. Works. Power is knowing that you can do whatever you want and not one person can stop you.
Trailers didn't used to be 2.5 minutes.
Those people are invisible. They don't exist.
If you threaten his work, he will destroy you.
You're alone?
You got no idea.
You're webbed up in this somehow, and these people aren't going to stop.
If.
You got a head just like mine, always turning things around. Some people call it a gift, but it's a brain affliction just the same.
Do you remember what I said?
She doesn't know. She doesn't know.
What don't I know?
That looks cool.
It does look good. I would have liked to have actually seen less. Like, okay, all right, yeah. He wants to avenge the death of his mentor. I get it. One thing that's always tricky for an actor, too, is like, I know Tourette's exists. I know it's a real thing. Whenever you see an actor do it, it always looks like, is that just an actor just cursing? Like, it always looks weird. Like, it's hard to suspend that disbelief to see, like, oh, no, he has an actual affliction.
Well, the test will be, like, when you just see it in a short trailer.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, there's Edward Norton acting with his affliction,
with a twitch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the movie, you begin to forget that. Then right. he'll have pulled it off. Yeah. So that's sure. I want to see that. I mean, yeah. I like that stuff, and you know, I like Ed Norton. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm totally gonna check that out.
So all right, this is The King with Timothy Chalamet. I think Timothy Chalamet is the new Shia LaBeouf before he went nuts.
Do you feel a sense of achievement?
In what regard?
No, never. In any regard. Do you?
A new chapter of my life has begun. Already I can feel the weight of this crown I wear.
I've been forced to rely upon the counsel of men whose loyalty I question every waking moment. I need men around me.
Every period piece need a monologue?
Yes.
Yeah.
King has enough friends.
I need to tell you exactly what's happening right now.
Historically, this is where we were on a timeline.
Yeah. I will come with you.
Here's the problem that I have that I'm going to lay out for you.
Joel Edgerton in armor, I'm in.
Bobby Pattinson in nuts.
I think so.
Yes. This is a prequel to the Henry V movie.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure it's well made. It's just like, you know, we got to have more. All right. Gowns and accents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this was like, all right.
King must have done well for Netflix.
Yes.
Like, oh, it did well.
Make it. Yep. Make it happen.
Yep. And I feel like, all right, well, we need this movie with this. We're just going to follow this template. Period piece, Oscar time, stars, put them in armor, make them look somber.
Yeah.
We're all set.
Yeah, done.
Yeah. So
done.
So
I shall never betray you. Yeah.
Put some lines like that in it.
Yeah, and then you're fine.
Horse, woman in a gown that's playing both sides. Yeah. Got it. I'm in.
Recant. Well, you must recant.
Well, yeah.
The High Court will never succumb to this.
There we go.
So I think we just wrote the script.
There we go. Palace.
So, okay, I wanted to talk to you guys. This is terrible timing, but there's nothing we can do about it. Our store is broken right now. The last 6 weeks of the store, it's broken on the server side. Apparently, they can't install a security certificate properly so our store is safe to use. So we're waiting for DreamHost to fix that. So unfortunately, that is out of our hands. So hopefully it will be fixed in a couple of days. Just wanted to let you guys know it's not your browser. It is broken, and it probably will be for the
it's
next
not
couple
you,
of days.
It's us.
Yeah, it's not you. It's us. So, but don't worry. There'll be plenty of time to buy your last-minute CFN items before the December 15th deadline. So I just want to let you know.
If you're really desperate for something, you can mail a check to the PO box saying, send me this, and this product.
Yes, you can do that too if you so choose.
Add a little money for shipping and handling. We'll get it out to you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, there's always a workaround. So, on DVD and Blu-ray, Them That Follow.
What was that?
These are a kind of movies that I've never heard of, but it's a very slow DVD Blu-ray.
How did you find their names?
This on the DVD Blu-ray site.
Antiquatedtechnology.com? Yes, is that what it's, you found these in the yellow pages? Where did you get these?
Them That Follow.
It's so, the story of a CB radio repairman?
It may or may not be a horror movie with a title like that.
Right. This feels like a creepy kid movie.
And that follow, it doesn't sound like it was written by someone with a good sense of grammar.
No, not at all.
This feels like a creepy kid movie. Like,
it could be.
Mommy?
I like how we haven't bothered to IMDb this. Determine exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's a... Aaron, can you look up Them That Follow?
Oh, why waste his time?
Now I'm very curious.
Yeah.
Now I'm extremely curious.
The next one's even better. This is called 10 Minutes Gone. It's the famous memory gap movie cliche where it's like a bank was robbed or something, but then that 10 minutes is gone from somebody's memory. But
it was the sequel to Gone in 60 Seconds.
That's what I was hoping it was. It's
what happens right after it's gone. It's like, oh, it's been gone for, you know, after 60 seconds, it's been gone for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot quicker.
The 10 minutes is where it goes to the chop shop.
Yeah. Awesome. So, but weird thing is, it's like Bruce Willis is in it, and like I think Michael Chiklis from The Shield. So this is definitely one of those movies that got kind of like independently funded overseas. Yes, and I'm like, all right, just release it. I mean, I feel like these movies were so bad Netflix didn't acquire them.
Well, you never know though. Every once in a while, I'll be thumbing through Netflix, you know, just at night, bored, looking for something to watch. I came across a movie called Mississippi Grind, which I don't ever remember coming out.
The name sounds familiar.
It's it's a really cool gambling movie.
It's a skateboard movie, right?
Nope. That's no. It's Mississippi Delta skateboarders. Yeah. They skateboard with blues singers. It's amazing. It's
Now I want to see it.
That sounds fantastic. That was a cool movie with Ryan Reynolds.
No. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Did you find anything, Aaron?
It's Appalachian
Pentecostal snake handlers. Ah, of course. Yes, them that follow.
That and sounds oh, great.
Snake handlers. Yeah, okay.
Pentecostal snake handlers.
Yeah, because the snakes must follow you or something.
Yeah.
Be handled.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine that list of 10 titles and that's the one they picked. So,
I think it sounds like they were just mixing words together.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. All right, get the title dartboard out. Let's see where the darts land. Oh, nobody got snake or Pentecostal. So, all right. And premiering this week, Terminator Dark Fate. I really want to see this movie.
I'm going Thursday night. Yeah. I got tickets Thursday night.
I want to see what James Cameron is going to do with the franchise. And also, it looks cool.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And Tim Miller's great. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm excited.
So. I've seen every one of these.
Yeah, so have I. Bad ones.
And I will continue to. I will continue to do that.
Yeah. And there's more of them than you think.
I know. You know?
So many more than you think.
Some hidden ones.
Yeah, yeah. There's one. Oh, when did this? Like, if you look at all the Terminator movies, the first thing you're going to say is, "When did that one come out?" Yeah.
Maybe
you
know, maybe 10 minutes gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Is a Terminator movie.
Terminator gone. Next movie is Harriet. This is, again, we're getting into like the trickling of Oscar contender movies. Mm-hmm. This looks like a kind of like that, it's Harriet Tubman, I'm assuming. It's from the trailer. It's about...
it's actually about Harriet Tubman's story.
It seems that way, it's... but it also, the one thing I am a little worried about, that it looks like it Hollywoodizes a little bit into like a bit of more of an action kind of thing where there's like, you know, there's a lot of gun holding, you know, like those kind of posing Hollywood shots of like, I'm like,
So Harriet Tubman, Jason Bourne, reunited.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure how good this is going to be.
That sounds like it's a bad thing.
Historically accurate.
They're coming to get vengeance on the Confederacy.
Actually, I'm curious now. Aaron, can you look up like the IMDb description of the Harriet movie?
Thank you. Thanks, Sarah. And the Motherless Brooklyn we just saw, which I'm excited to see.
I'm excited to see that.
Now, The Irishman, wait a minute.
I'm really excited to see
this. This is the Scorsese Netflix movie.
Right.
It's 2 hours of him complaining about Marvel movies.
I think it's actually 3 hours long.
Yeah.
It's actually 3.5 hours long, to be honest with you.
And that's not even the director's cut.
No, and then there's a Q&A after. So, but yeah, this one looks really good. It's like it's Scorsese. Like, all right, I'm going to pull everybody from every one of my movies, and I'm going to put them
in. It's like Martin Scorsese's greatest hits.
Yeah, it really feels that way, and I'm on board.
I'm totally down for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's 3 hours and 29 minutes long.
Wow, yes. Really?
Yep.
How long is Harriet?
The Irishman sounds like Netflix went to Martin Scorsese and says, "We want you to make a miniseries for us." And he said, "No, I want to make a movie." "How long is your movie?" "It's 3.5 hours long." "Why can't it be a miniseries?" "Because it's a movie."
Yeah.
And they went, you know, people are going to pause and pick it up anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And Netflix said, "Well, can we make it a miniseries?" "No." "Do you still want to do it?" "Yes."
Yes. Exactly. So.
Harriet is a whole movie shorter. At 2 hours and 5 minutes.
And is it about Harriet Tubman?
Yes, the extraordinary tale of Harriet Tubman's escape from slavery and transformation into one of America's greatest heroes.
All right.
Yes.
That sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
That's also where she gets her superpowers. Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Or she becomes Tubman.
Yeah. Yes.
She becomes Tubman. Well, that's our show, folks. 488. Is. Lock it down. Put it in the books.
Now, Mark, tell us about, you've got the crossover.
Graham was ready
up.
To just get rid of me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he wants to ask any questions. It's okay.
That's it. Wrap it up. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks.
Goodbye.
Put this one in the books.
Mark's ride is here.
Yeah. So tell us about this, the crossover coming up, and what you have coming up.
Yeah, it's insanity. We are crossing over 6 shows over 5 hours of television, wow. 5 episodes.
Now, is it one each day, or are you like that one out?
It's going to be the first 3 will be one each day. It'll mm-hmm. be Supergirl, Batwoman, and Flash mm-hmm. in 3 nights in a row in December. Mm-hmm. And then the 4th and 5th hours, Arrow and Legends, respectively, will come out in January. So all on the CW, all... So craziness.
How long has this been like in the works?
We planted a flag at the end of last year's crossover saying we were going to do Crisis on Infinite Earths, mm-hmm. Which is the seminal DC Comics maxi series. And I should really look back and see when we started working on in earnest, but it was over 6 months ago. It was a while mm-hmm. ago. So this has been in the works for quite some time, mm-hmm. Because it has to be. It's such a beloved property, and it's such a huge undertaking. And we're not just crossing over 6 shows across 5 series. We're also crossing over all these other characters and elements from the DC universe itself.
Can you reveal any of the surprise characters that are going to be in?
I can reveal to you the ones we've already revealed. Mm-hmm. They're not that surprising. Burt Ward is mm-hmm. returning. Uh-huh. Tom Welling and Erica Durance from Smallville are returning. John Wesley Shipp reprising his role as Barry Allen in The Flash mm-hmm. From the Flash series from 1990. Hopefully a bunch of surprises. Brandon Routh, this is really exciting. Brandon Routh is not only returning as Ray Palmer, who he plays on Legends, and who he played on Arrow, but also returning as Superman
mm-hmm.
From Superman Returns. So a lot of cool Easter eggs, a lot of cool, you know, some of them are cameos, some of them are bigger pieces, mm-hmm. you know, bigger storylines. It really runs the gamut, but it's a big undertaking, and if I sound tired, it's because we just wrapped production last week. We still have some today. We're actually doing some pickups mm-hmm. over on Batwoman. We still have some green screen work, visual effects, post production, editing, you name it. Long hours in the editing room ahead of me, but it's really exciting, and it's
cool.
Coming together really
and
well.
It starts in December.
It'll start in December.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yes. Now, is there any crossover with like as far as Gotham goes with Batwoman, like will we see Bruce Wayne or anybody
actually,
like that in there?
Actually, Kevin Conroy mm-hmm. is going to reprise his role as Batman from the 1992 animated series, oh, wow. as well as Batman Beyond. He'll be playing an older Bruce Wayne.
Oh, cool.
Which is really, really cool. I gotta say, like, I've seen his performance, and it's phenomenal. He's mm-hmm. really great. Mm-hmm. I think he's really going to surprise a lot of people who only really know him from his voice work.
Yeah. Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it's really great.
What's the start date? When does it kick off?
Oh, I should know that.
Yeah, December?
I really should know that. In December, I want to say 18. I could be wrong. Don't quote me. It's the internet.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah.
CW will know.
Yeah, they'll know. They'll tell you. Believe me, I'm sure they're going to get the word out.
Yeah.
Cool. You can watch the series that I directed, the First Nations Comedy Experience, is on Amazon Prime, all 13 episodes. So check that out. The more you like, watch it, view it. Click it. Amazon goes all by that. So if enough people watch it, we can maybe do a second season, which will be cool.
She didn't catch that, Siri.
I'll say it again, Siri. The First Nations Comedy Experience is available at Amazon Prime. Does that help, Siri?
I can't help you with movies on Prime Video.
You know, I don't need that kind of... Thanks for that no help. I mean,
geez, boy, the really got snippy when you mentioned a competitor.
She's like, you don't want to watch Prime Video.
Yeah, Amazon Prime.
You're not interested.
Amazon Prime.
Can I interest you in Apple TV?
It's all bullshit on Amazon Prime. So yeah, unless you're Siri, who's offended by me promoting the series, go there. And of course, the Progressive Comedy Tour. We will be in Australia next month, November 14th, Melbourne, the 15th, Adelaide, 17th, Sydney, 22nd, Perth. Melbourne is almost sold out. So check that out. And then, of course, we're doing the Comedy Film Nerd Show December 12th at Dynasty Typewriter. December 13th, we're doing Progressive Comedy Tour in Ventura. December 14th, we're doing Progressive Comedy Tour in Hollywood at the Sycamore Tavern. All my tour dates are at grahamelwood.com.
So, and I want to let you guys know, I'm finally ready to start the Kickstarter for Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master, the comic we'll be doing with Starburns. More info on that, give you a little heads up. It should be launching next week. So check it out. If you want to go to Kickstarter and just follow Comedy Film Nerds right now, then you'll know immediately when it launches. But we're really excited. We got some amazing rewards with Starburns coming aboard. They're offering the entire Starburns digital library of all their comics, a tour of the Starburns offices so you could see where Rick and Morty get made.
That's cool.
And which would be really fun. And also, we're going to be offering a couple slots on the last Comedy Film Nerds show as rewards. And there's also a giant reward at the end if you want help making your own comic. We'll all jump in and help out. I'll help write. Fernando will help draw. The letters will come on board, and the editor, Brendan Wright from Dark Horse, will also edit and help you pitch your book, too.
And just so you know, this is based on a script that Chris wrote that's a feature film that, so if the graphic novel does well, that's something we want to make and do a feature in a movie down the road.
That's the whole
purpose of this. When we talk about...
create an IP.
Yes. we talk about we're going to keep doing stuff after we stop doing the podcast. We want to just have more time to do feature films. That's what we want to do.
We just want to make movies.
That's all we want to do, man. Just want to make movies.
So, all right, and that's everything.
That's our show.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Mark, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Yeah.
Coming out here. Aaron, thank you, and everybody at the All Things Comedy World headquarters. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini, and as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Crossover.